he's going to tell us about the interpretation of the Barberi emergency parameter and its consequences. Hello, where's the study?
Okay. Hello, here is Marseille.
Welcome.
So, first of all, let me say that it's a great pleasure to speak in this series of seminars, and I would like to thank Abbe and Jorge for having invited me to speak today. And this talk is mainly concerned with a long-standing problem of loop quantum gravity, which is the interpretation of the Barberi-Mirzi parameter. Essentially, I will propose a topological interpretation of this parameter, and in analogy with the theta angle of Young-Mills gauge theories. I also describe some interesting consequences, mainly based on some results we have recently obtained here at Penn State. And okay, we can go to slide number two, where you can find the motivation for this work. And you know, the Mirzi parameter is a free constant that appears in the spectra of the quantum operators of LQG. And but its origin is still debated. Many others have contributed to understand the physical origin of this parameter. But I think that one of the most intriguing proposals in this sense is the one by Gambini, Obregon, and Pullin. Essentially, they suggest that it exists a strict analogy between the appearance of the Mirzi ambiguity in a canonical quantum gravity and the theta angle of Young and Mirzi gauge theories. But I have to say that in pure gravity, this this analogy is not completely convincing. And so I will try to extend the essentially the host framework to Riemann-Cartan spacetime in order to introduce a real a true topological term into the action for gravity. And in this way, we can try to construct a more rigorous analogy between the appearance of the Mirzi parameter and the theta angle of Young and Mirzi gauge theories. Then this this analogy also suggests a possible further extension of this framework. Namely, the I describe the possibility that the Barberi-Mirzi parameter is actually a field rather than a constant. Okay, we can go to slide number three. Here it is the outline of the talk, which is roughly divided into two parts. In the first part, I will review the role of the Barberi-Mirzi parameter in classical and quantum gravity. And then I will introduce the interaction between gravity and fermion matter fields. This point is important because, as you know, the presence of fermions generates torsion on the space-time. And this fact can reveal some interesting features of the Hoots framework. In particular, it suggests also how to generalize the Hoots framework by the introduction of the Nyeyang topological density. I will tell you something about the relation of the Nyeyang topological density with the Pontryagin density. And but I think the main point of this first part of the talk is the generalization of the Hoots theory to spacetime with torsion. And in this enlarged framework, I will make a comparison between the Barberi-Mirzi parameter and the vacuum angle of Young and Mirzi gauge theories. Okay, slide number four. This is the second part of the talk, and initially I will give you some motivation to consider the hypothesis that the Barberi-Mirzi parameter is actually a field, and I will study the dynamics of this field. I have to say that this idea has captured the interest of many people lately, and so I will try to compare our model with the previously existing ones. Then I will introduce also in this case the interaction with fermions, which plays an interesting role because it's essentially the Barberi Mirzi field interacts with fermions in a peculiar way. And this peculiar interaction suggests the possibility of introducing a sort of Pecci-Quinn mechanism to determine the value of the Barberi-Mirzi parameter in a dynamical way. Time allowing, I will also tell you something about the canonical theory and a possible proposal for the Ashtekar-Barbero formulation of the canonical theory with the Barberi-Mirzi field. At the end, some concluding remarks and discussion will follow. Okay, we can start from slide number 5. And here in equation 1, you can immediately recognize the formula for the spectrum of the area operator of LQG, where the gamma parameter in red is the Mirzi parameter. The fact that the Mirzi parameter affects the kinematical observables of loop quantum gravity is weird enough because essentially it was introduced by a canonical transformation. But according to a work by Rovelli and Thiemann in 1998, this canonical transformation cannot be implemented unitarily in the quantum theory. But it resembles like a rescaling. And usually a rescaling of the canonical variables generate different but unitary equivalent quantum representation. So what happens here? The answer is on the slide number 6. And one possibility is that the Barberi-Mirzi parameter has a topological origin. If this is the case, different values of gamma leads to an equivalent representation of the quantum canonical commutation relations. And specifically, in Young and Mills gauge theories, I think that one of the well-known examples is QCD, where a non-vanishing theta parameter appears as a multiplicative constant in front of the Pontryagin density, which, being a topological term, does not affect the classical equation of motion. Nevertheless, it strongly affects the non-perturbative quantum theory. And in particular, the presence of this term allows quantum transition between vacuum states with different winding numbers. And these transitions violates CP. So the presence of the parameter theta in QCD has produces striking effects on the observables of the theory. And essentially, this was also, I think, the idea that Gambini, Obregon, and Poulin suggests. And because the theta ambiguity appearing in the Young-Mills gauge theory and the Barberi-Mirzi parameter of canonical quantum gravity do not affect the classical theory, but both produce striking effects in the quantum regime. But in the case of pure gravity, this analogy is not completely convincing, and the reason essentially is the fact that the host modification is not a topological term. And I want to give you the details of this statement. We can go to slide number 7, where you can immediately recognize the host action. The host action essentially is the sum of two contributions. The first one is the Hilbert-Palladini action, where on the right you can recognize the Hilbert-Palladini action, and the star is the Hodge dual. The second term is the host modification, where beta is the Mirzi parameter. And for later convenience, I defined beta as minus 1 upon gamma. The signature during the talk is plus minus minus minus. And we set h bar equal to c equal to 1 so that the Newton's constant has the dimension of a length square. The presence of the host modification doesn't affect the second Cartan structure equation, which is the first equation in line 3. This equation can be solved extracting the expression of the spin connection as function of the gravitational field. But more importantly, if omega satisfies the structure equation, its associated curvature 2 form satisfies the cyclic Bianchi identity, which is the second equation in line 3. And as a consequence, the Hall's term doesn't affect the classical equation of motion of GR. But as you can understand, this statement is based on the fact that the right-hand side of the structure equation vanishes. So let me now study a more general case, and we can go to slide number 8, where I'm considering a Riemann-Cartan spacetime where torsion does not vanish. If torsion does not vanish, the cyclic Bianchi identity turns out to be modified by the presence of a right-hand side, which depends on the covariant derivative of torsion. So the Hall's modification in this case affects the classical equations, and it cannot be considered a topological density. So the beta parameter appears in front of a term which vanishes on shell, but is not ascribable among the topological densities. Okay, and the case of fermion's field coupled to gravity is particularly instructive in this sense, because coupling fermion's field to first-order Palatini gravity generates torsion in space-time, and this reveals some interesting features about the Hall's theory, and also suggests how to generalize the Hall's framework in the presence of torsion. So we can go to slide number 9, where I describe the interaction between gravity and fermion matter fields, starting from the simplest model. And the simplest model is the Einstein-Cartan theory. So the Einstein-Cartan theory is essentially is described by the Einstein-Cartan action, which contains the Hilbert-Palladini action in the first line and the Dirac action in the second line of equation 5. The covariant derivatives are defined in equation 6, where omega is a Lorentz-valued connection one form, and sigma are the generators of the Lorentz group. So this action can be varied with respect to the connection one form, and we can calculate the associated structure equation, which is the first one in equation 7. And as you can understand, the torsion doesn't vanish in this case. In particular, it depends on the gravitational field E and on the spinor axial current J, which is defined in the second equation in line 7. This equation can be easily solved, and the solution is below. In particular, omega circle is the usual Ricci spin connection, which depends only on the gravitational field, and the second term is the contortion term, which depends on the fermionic axial current. From the structure equation, we can immediately note that the only irreducible component to torsion, which plays a role here, is the axial part. And, okay, so we can go to the next slide, slide number 10. And as a side remark, I would like to note that the Cartan structure equation does not contain any dynamical information. Essentially, it is an algebraic relation that makes it possible to uniquely re-express the Lorentz-valued connection as a function of the other fields. Now, if we pull back the solution of the Cartan structure equation into the original action, we can calculate the Einstein-Cartan effective action, which is given here on slide 10. But what is interesting is the term in the third line, which is a Fermi-like interaction. I have to say that physically, the fermionic density at which the Fermi-like term becomes to have effects is enormous. But it cannot be excluded that such a huge density has been reached during the early stages of evolution of our universe. And this idea has recently led many others to consider the possibility that such a term can play a role in the expansion of the primordial universe. So the so essentially the Einstein-Cartan theory is interesting on its own. But my intention is to compare this effective action with the one coming out from the generalized action in slide on slide 11. So next slide. Here I consider what I called the Einstein-Cartan Hall's theory, where in equation 8 I in the first line of the equation 8 you can recognize the Hall's action, where beta is the Mirzi parameter, and the second line is the minimally coupled Dirac action. Now, the structure equation is modified by the presence of the Hall's modification. In particular, the torsion tensor contains a term more, and the term in the box comes directly from the Hall's modification, and obviously it vanishes as soon as beta is equal to zero. But strangely enough, the term in the box is related to the vector scalar component of torsion, and but it is an actual vector rather than a vector, so it in some sense complicates the geometrical interpretation of the torsion tau a. Okay, next slide. This equation can, the second Cartan structure equation can be easily solved as before. And now if we pull back the solution into the effective action, into the original Einstein-Cartan host action, we can calculate the effective action. And as I told you before, the term in the box, you remember from the previous slide, is a should transform as a vector. Instead, it is an actual vector, and it has been argued by that this behavior could lead to a violation of parity. But this seems not to be the case. Indeed, the effective action preserves parity, and the only modification is the rescaling factor depending on beta, in front of the four fermions interacting term, so the term in the third line of equation 11. And this is the only deviation of this generalized model with respect to the Einstein-Cartan one. Okay, we can go to the next slide. And here it is a further generalized model, where essentially there is the it is in the first line you can recognize the host action. In the second line there is the Dirac action, which is modified with respect to the Einstein-Cartan host theory by the presence of the operator S5 beta. Now it turns out it has been demonstrated by Ramesh Kaul that the same modification is required in supergravities in order to preserve supersymmetry. So it seems that this modification, depending on the beta gamma 5 factor, is pretty general. And what is interesting is that this action is dynamically equivalent to that of the Einstein-Cartan theory. So it does not produce any modification with respect to the Einstein-Cartan theory, in contrast with the Einstein-Cartan host action. We have also to note that for beta equal to I, only the left-handed fermions interact with the self-dual Hasheegger connection. And so the above action can be considered as a natural generalization of the original Hasheegger, Romano, and Tate action for fermions this is a generalization to arbitrary values of the Barber-Immersi parameter. in contrast with the previous model, which has not this, doesn't share this property. And in particular, in the previous model, when beta is equal to I, the four fermions term blows up. Okay, we can go to the next slide. And I want to describe you why this action is completely equivalent to the Einstein-Cartan action. And the reason is essentially the following. I collected in the integral I the modification, the host modification, and the modification I introduced in the Dirac action. Okay, using the solution of the second Cartan structure equation obtained from the non-minimal action, we can rewrite this the integral in equation 12 as a total derivative, and as you can see in equation 13. This total derivative is connected with the Nie-Jahn density, and as you can immediately understand looking at equation 13, the Nie-Jahn density is a generalization of the host modification because it contains the host modification, but it is more general because it contains also a torsion square term, so it can be generalized also to Riemann-Cartan spacetime. In particular, the Nie-Jahn term is a true topological term. And so what I want to propose here is on the next slide, slide number 15. And my proposal is to modify the action for gravity adding the Nie-Jahn term. So here there is the new action where the first term is the Hilbert-Palladini, and the second term is a matter action. And matter action refers in general to any kind of matter, bosonic as well as fermionic, and minimally coupled to the gravitational field. In the third line of equation 14, there is the modification, which is the Nie-Jahn topological density, and beta here plays the role of the Immirsi parameter. In other words, the non-minimal action studied before suggests that a particular role could be played in gravity by the Nie-Jahn density. Here, we propose to reverse the argument and consider as fundamental action the one containing the Nie-Jahn term, and then couple matter fields by using the usual minimal prescription. And this seems to be much more natural with respect to the non-minimal action. I have to make some remarks here, and in particular, I want to stress that the proposed action describes the same classical dynamics of the Einstein-Cartan action. Then the BI parameter disappears from the effective classical action, and in the sense I told you before, it generalizes the host approach to a Riemann-Cartan spacetime. Moreover, the new action suggests a possible physical interpretation of the Barberi-Mirsi parameter in analogy with the theta angle of Young and Mills sketch theories. Okay, we can go to the slide 16. And the fact that the action now contains a true topological term allows us to construct a rigorous analogy between the presence of the theta parameter in Young and Mills sketch theory and the Barberi-Mirsi parameter in canonical quantum gravity, as initially suggested by Gammini, Obrigo, and Pulli. So we can say that we complete the picture proposed by Gammini, Obrigo, and Pulli. Moreover, I showed in a paper in 2008 that the Ashtekar-Barbero constraints of GR can be obtained by rescaling the heuristic state functional of the Einstein-Cartan theory by the exponential of the Nie-Jahn functional. Now, the Nie-Jahn functional is essentially the three-form constructed by a wedge product between the gravitational field and the torsion two-form, and it plays exactly the same role of the Chern-Simons functional. Now, the details about the large cage transformation involved in this in this framework will appear in a forthcoming paper, and I don't have time to deep into this argument. Anyway, what I want to say is that more rigorously, we should work with the well-defined states of LQG. And what we expect is that the rescaling of the states by the exponential of the Nyeyang functional multiplied by the constant beta tilde generates a shift of the Barberi-Mirzi parameter. Essentially, beta will go in beta plus beta tilde. Okay, further details will appear soon, most likely. And okay, so next slide. And this is okay. So I finished the first part of my talk. I want to just recall you the argument I described here. So I started from a general remarks about the role of the Barberi-Mirzi parameter. Then I introduced the Einstein-Cartan theory and some generalization. In particular, I proposed a new action for gravity coupled to fermions. And then I generalized the OS framework to a Riemann-Cartan space-time. So is there any question at this point?
If you go to slide 13, please. Go back to slide 13.
Yeah.
So you pointed out that this extra term that you added, mm-hmm. it was also noted that it's needed in supergravity.
Yeah.
By Ramesh Kaur. But I'm a little confused because in supergravity, why would there be the beta term, the Barberi-Mirzi parameter term? Can you explain what you meant?
Yes. Essentially, what Ramesh Kaur demonstrated is that if I start from supergravity, then I want to construct the analog of the beta of the Hoss modification for supergravity. In order to preserve supersymmetry, I'm obliged to add also modification in the fermionic part of the supergravitational theory. And that modification exactly corresponds to a beta gamma 5 modification in the Dirac action.
Okay, so the statement is that he already started with the Barberi-Mirzi parameter formulation of gravity.
I started from the usual supergravity, but if I want to generalize it to contain the Hoss modification, I have to modify
also
the fermionic sector.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you. Any other questions? If not, let's go to the part 2, maybe.
Okay. So, slide 18. This is the outline of the second part of the talk. I want to just recall you the main steps, and I will promote the Barberi-Mirzi to be a field, and then I will study the interaction with fermions and a sort of Peccei-Quinn mechanism. And time allowing, I will tell you something about the canonical theory. Okay, slide 19. And here I make a detour with respect to the classical theory. And this detour from the classical theory regards the essentially a result of particle physics. It is well known that the mass matrices of quarks resulting from the spontaneous breaking of the SU2 cross U1 symmetry are neither diagonal nor Hermitian. Now, in order to diagonalize M, we have to chiral rotate the quarks fields, which are described here by the symbol Q and Q bar. Just for notation, the psi and psi bar usually denotes leptons, and the Q and Q bars denotes quarks. So this chiral transformation depends on the argument of the determinant of the matrix M, so of the mass matrix of quarks, where NF is the number of flavors. But such a chiral transformation introduces a divergent term in the effective action. Okay, we can go to the next slide, slide 20. And here it is the Jacobian of the actual U1 transformation involved in this redefinition of the quarks field. In particular, alpha is the parameter of this transformation. It is essentially the argument of the determinant of the mass matrix, and lambda is the cutoff. This result has been obtained by Chandia and Zanelli using the Fujikawa method, but there are also some independent calculations using the triangle diagram, and the result is the same. The term proportional to the Nyeyang density diverges as the square of the regulator. In particular, the resulting effective action, which comes from this transformation, contains a divergent term proportional to the Nyeyang density, as you can understand from the equation below. And this divergent term sums up with the Barberi-Mirzi parameter. Now, as soon as we try to remove the regulator, we obtain a divergence. But this divergence can be reabsorbed in the definition of beta if beta is a field. So, in the next slide, slide 21, I propose you...
Can I have a question here?
Yeah.
So the term R which R doesn't have a divergence, and the term C which C has a divergence?
Yeah, exactly.
Because of the dimension. Okay, that was my question. So,
yeah.
So R which R is a dimension 4 and C which C is dimension 2. Okay.
Yeah, you are
okay.
Perfectly right.
The dimensions are right. Okay.
Yeah.
Can I also follow up with a question? So yeah. In their work, Chandler and Zanelli, Simone from Perimeter as well, they were proposing, if I remember, to reabsorb this divergence into rescaling the tetrad field, which was a bit controversial, and there were some comments and replies.
Yeah.
Here, you're about to propose something different, which is to reabsorb it into the Mirzi field.
Yeah, I'm doing something completely different, because I'm reabsorbing the divergence in the definition of the Barberi-Mirzi field. So I'm not touching the tetrads.
Okay.
So it's a completely different proposal. Okay.
Yes, thank you.
Okay.
Although at some stage, if you go to quantum theory, right, it is similar to using the tetra, in the sense that if I go to the quantum theory, then you've got a connection, and you've got a canonically conjugate momentum. And then you've got the triad. And the triad is related to the momentum via the Barberi-Mirzi parameter. So it has some spiritual similarity to rescaling what you mean by the triad in terms of the momentum, if you think of the momentum as fundamental as we always do in the canonical theory. But on the other hand, it is not the same. I mean, it's in some sense, it's like having the cake and eating it too.
Okay, so we can go to slide 21. And I propose you this total action for the system of gravity coupled to matter, to a general matter action, and then in the third line you can see the coupling between the Barberi-Mirzi field and the Nyeyang density. Now dynamically, the new action 17 is no longer equivalent to the Einstein-Cartan 1, just for the presence of the field beta. But if we try to implement the same chiral transformation as above, now with the presence of the Barberi-Mirzi field, we can reabsorb the divergence in the redefinition of the field beta. And this is the last equation in the center of the slide. Now, in this new framework, the Barberi-Mirzi parameter can be naturally associated to the expectation value of the field beta. And I want to also say that, in other words, Okay, the barbaric Mirzi parameter here is a completely free parameter because it's the expectation value of a scalar field, which is coupled to gravity in some way. But what we expect is that it is possible to construct a dynamical mechanism to determine the value of the barbaric Mirzi parameter. In other terms, I expect that it is possible to construct a dynamical mechanism which can relate the barbaric Mirzi parameter to other topological ambiguities. But to do this, we need to introduce also fermion's field. So let me first describe the dynamics of the barbaric Mirzi field without considering fermions, because it is interesting on its own, and then I will generalize this model. So we can go to the slide 22, where essentially I calculated the second Cartan structure equation coming from the variation of the action above with respect to the spin connection. And I found that the torsion tensor depends on the derivative of the scalar field of the field beta. Now, it is clear from this equation that beta has to be a pseudoscalar, because otherwise torsion would not be a tensor under the internal Lorentz rotations. So from now on, we will consider a pseudo-scalar field, beta, and we can pull back the action on the solution of the structure equation, and we can obtain the effective action in line in the effective action 18. So as you can see, the effective action is essentially a gravitational system plus a decoupled scalar field. Where I redefined the field beta in such a way that beta tilde has the dimension of a length to the minus 1. Okay, we can go to the next slide, where there are some remarks. Now, the parameter beta is promoted to be a field, and in this way, the Nyeyan topological density the Nyeyan is no longer a topological density, just because the presence of the barbarian Mirzi field modifies the second Cartan structure equation. So the presence of this field generates a modification with respect to the Einstein-Cartan theory. And the net effect of the of this torsion tensor we have calculated before is the presence of a kinetic term for the field of beta. So the dynamics of beta is completely described by the geometry, by the torsion tensor. And in particular, in the point 2, I let you know that what I said to you before. The following is that the usual to preserve the usual transformation properties of the reducible components of torsion, the beta field has to be a pseudoscalar. And interestingly enough, the pseudoscalar nature of beta is not assumed a priori, but is a geometrical consequence of the theory. I want to also say that it seems that the effective theory automatically preserves itself from any possible parity violating term. I would prefer to say that in some sense geometry preserves the effective theory from the arising of any possible parity violating term. Nevertheless, CP violating terms could appear in the effective theory as soon as we take into account quantum effects. Then the barbaric Mirzi field decouples from gravity in this model and behaves exactly as a pseudoscalar field. This is in contrast with the previous model based on the usual host action. In this case, in fact, it is the field phi which plays the role of the scalar field rather than beta itself. And this is correlated with the fact that the presence of the field beta generates torsion. And as we have argued before, when torsion is present, so the spacetime is a Riemann-Cartan spacetime, we have to generalize the host framework. So in some sense, the action with the Nie-Yan term appears to a large extent to be more natural and general with respect to the action with the host modification only. I want to also remark that the starting Lagrangian, as well as the effective one, are symmetric under a rescaling of the field beta. This symmetry cannot remain exact in the quantum theory because it is an actual U1 symmetry and it is usually broken by the quantum theory. And thus it can produce an interaction of the Barberi-Mirzi field with the Pontryagin class of the gravitational field. So the Barberi-Mirzi field can be associated in this sense with the Nambu-Goldstone boson of the broken actual U1 symmetry. And as the axion, the chiral anomaly generates the interaction with the Pontryagin class, which represent a non-trivial potential for the Barberi-Mirzi field. The presence of this non-trivial potential can break the symmetry and can select a particular value for beta naught, which was associated to the Barberi-Mirzi parameter before. And by introducing fermion, we can describe this phenomenon in detail. So go to the next slide, slide 24. Where essentially I use the same action, but I coupled also fermion fields. Now dynamically, the equation, the action in equation 19 is not equivalent to the Einstein-Cartan one. In fact, the presence of the new field beta modifies the structure equation. And okay. And in particular, there is a sum of the contribution coming from the pseudo-scalar beta field and the actual spinor current. So in the next slide, slide 25, you can see the effective action in equation 20, where a peculiar interaction term appears between the Barberi-Mirzi field and the actual current for fermions, and it is the last term in equation 20. Now we have to remember that we are in a completely torsionless spacetime now because we solved the second Cartan structure equation and we calculate the effective action. So the essentially the presence of torsion can be recognized in the presence in the action of a kinetic term for the beta field and an interaction term with fermions. But now if we remember that the chiral anomaly prevents the actual current to be conserved, and in particular the derivative of the actual current is proportional to the Pontryagin class, we can rewrite the last term of equation 20 as the last term of equation 21. So as I said to you before, there is an interaction between the Barberi-Mirzi field, a non-trivial interaction between the Barberi-Mirzi field and the Pontryagin class, the gravitational Pontryagin class in equation 21, which is the effective action for this system. So now, okay. We can go to the slide 26, and but you know, for since we are considering an effective action, we have also to to add possible PMCP violating terms in the effective action. And essentially this CP violating terms comes from a possible non-vanishing vacuum angle due to the global structure of the local gauge group. And moreover, the possible presence of quarks introduces another term proportional to the argument of the determinant of the mass matrix. And so we can include this term considering a parameter theta tilde, which is the sum of the vacuum angle and the alpha parameter coming from the quark's contribution. So the last term in the effective action contains also a possible term which violates parity. And violates parity and also CP. And let me concentrate just on this last term. So we can go to the next slide, slide 27, where I rewrote this CP violating term. Now, this is the only CP violating term in this action. And in particular, this term can be rotated away by using a chiral transformation, exactly the same thing which happens in the QCD. Now, if in the theory we consider also the presence of quarks, this term can be rotated away, and it produces a CP violation effect, which can affect the magnetic moment of the neutron. And studying these possible physical effects and also other effects which comes from the presence of this term in the gravitational theory, so regarding cosmology or others, we can put a limit on the value of this term. And in particular, if we don't measure any CP violation in this system, then we can imagine that a sort of Pecci-Quinn mechanism is working here. And the Pecci-Quinn mechanism essentially consists in the following. Since the only CP violating term is the one in equation 23, then we can imagine an effective potential for the field beta tilde. And this effective potential has to be even in the combination theta tilde plus beta tilde. In this way, it will have a stationary point in theta tilde plus beta tilde equal to zero. And if the system lives in the neighborhood of the minimum of this potential, we can preserve P and the P and CP symmetries. This is exactly what happens for the axion in the QCD theory. So it is a sort of Pecci-Quinn mechanism for this particular gravitational system. And according to this mechanism, we can relate the value of the Barberi-Mirzi parameter to the other topological ambiguity theta tilde. So just a side remark, and we have to note that only the physical field beta tilde phis, which is beta tilde minus its expectation value, interacts with gravity via the Pontryagin density. So this interaction, this physical interaction, effective interaction, doesn't violate P and CP. So the theory, once we implemented the Pecci-Quinn mechanism, the theory is completely CP preserving.
So Stefan wrote this, something.
Could you come up and speak in this?
Sure. So my question is that Stefan had a paper where he used the McDowell-Mansouri action and some symmetry breaking arguments to essentially, I think, obtain the same similar result, if not the same. So no. I was wondering if.
No, the result was completely different. It, in the paper by Stefani, in his paper, tried to relax the cosmological constant using a sort of dynamical mechanism, using a sort of Pecci-Quinn mechanism also in that case. But the result is completely different. I'm fixing the Barberi-Mirzi parameter, relating it to another topological ambiguity, which is theta-tilde. Stefani in his paper tried to relax the value of the cosmological constant using an analog argument, but physically the two theories are completely different.
I might be mistaken, but I think there's a
similar. I've spoken with Stefani. We exchanged some emails about this, and I'm pretty sure that his theory was completely different. It's something other. Something else, sorry. Okay, we can go to the slide 28, where, okay, if I have time, I can say something about the canonical theory.
I think maybe at this stage, if there are questions on the previous part, because it has really changed the subject again, are there any questions about this Pecci-Quinn mechanism, the relation of beta naught to theta tilde, and other issues? Okay, so let's go to the last part.
Okay, so let me tell you something about the canonical theory. And essentially, these are in equation 24, 25, and 26. There are the constraints of the canonical theory with the Barberi-Mirzi field. And as you can understand, this work is in collaboration with Gianluca Garcani, who is here, and if you want to say something, Gianluca, you are free. And as you can understand here, the constraints are just the constraints of canonical general relativity in the time gauge, plus the contribution due to the presence of the scalar field. Here it is the symplectic structure in equation 27. And I made the same rescale as above to define a beta field which is the dimension of a length to the minus 1. Okay, go to the next slide, slide 29. And one immediately could be tempted to define the new Heidegger variables by using the beta field. But this definition generates a complicated new canonical algebra. And in particular, the above definition breaks the rescaling symmetry of the theory. And this is the reason why it generates a complicated algebra. So according to the interpretation I gave before about the Barberi-Mirzi parameter, we can define the Heidegger-Barbero connection as in equation 28. Where beta naught is the has to be considered as a completely arbitrary constant associated to the expectation value of a free scalar field. But in the non-perturbative quantum theory, the scaling symmetry cannot remain unbroken, and so it can generate a non-trivial effective potential which can dynamically fix the value of beta naught. Next slide, slide 30. These are the constraints written in the Heidegger-Barbero formalism. And where the only difference is in the fact with respect to the usual one is in the fact that the beta parameter here is associated to the vacuum expectation value of the pseudo scalar field beta tilde. So I understand this is a little bit speculative, but I hope that we can studying the system with fermions, we can find the same interaction I described to you before in the Lagrangian theory. And probably this interaction can add an interaction between the Barberi-Mirzi field and the Pontryagin class of the curvature to form F, which is related to the Ashtekar-Barbero connection. So this is a work in progress, and I don't want to say more, but it was just to let you know how what I said before is connected with the formalism of with the Ashtekar-Barbero formalism for general relativity, and then for with the non-perturbative quantization of gravity. So let me go to the conclusions, slide 31. And so in this talk, I give you just initially a review of the role of the Barberi-Mirzi parameter, which is a free constant appearing in the kinematical observables of loop quantum gravity. And you know the value of the Mirzi parameter can be determined by studying the black hole modes, but its nature is still debated. So here, motivated by a suggestion of Gambini, Obregon, and Pullin, I proposed a topological interpretation of the theta of the Barberi-Mirzi parameter in analogy with the theta parameter of Young and Mills gauge theories. But to complete this analogy, I needed to extend the host framework to torsional spacetime, where I defined a true topological term containing the host modification. I also gave you a general argument about the possibility that the Barberi-Mirzi parameter can be promoted to be a field. And the effective dynamics revealed that the Barberi-Mirzi field behaves as a pseudo-scalar field. Then, I also introduced fermions in this framework, and it seems that the introduction of fermions is quite important also in this new framework, because it allows us to study a sort of Pecci-Quinn mechanism in order to provide a dynamical determination of the Barberi-Mirzi parameter, in the sense that through this mechanism we were able to relate the Barberi-Mirzi parameter to another topological ambiguities of the theory. Now, in order to study the outcomes in a rigorous way, we should introduce this new concept in the work post-formalism of loop quantum gravity. And it is possible that through an analogous mechanism, the Barberi-Mirzi parameter could be dynamically related to other topological quantities. In particular, I think that it could be really important to study the interaction with fermions in the canonical framework, because a new interaction could appear, providing the interesting effects which can determine the Mirzi parameter as function of other possible ambiguities. Okay, before I stop talking, I would like to acknowledge collaboration with Victor Taveras and Gianluca Carcagni, mainly on the second part of this talk. And I would like also to thank Abai for a lot of constructive criticism on this work. And that's all. Thank you.
Okay, so questions, comments?
Hi.
Yes?
Hi, this is Kulam. I have a question that is a simple question. I mean, so the way Simone proposed to promote the BI parameter to the BI field and treat the BI parameter to the expectation value at some stage, in my understanding. So
yep.
Will that affect the computation of black hole entropy in the standard way that it's being done in quantum gravity? So the value of classification value might depend on the state, and the value of the Barbary Emergency Parameter may be different or different state. Am I wrong with this, or would it be more on this?
I don't think that the usual determination of the Barbary Emergency parameter through the modes of the black holes is affected by this model. Just because the presence of the scalar field shouldn't affect that calculation. And I think there is a paper by Alejandro Felicia about this. So in this paper, essentially, this showed that the I'm not sure about what is demonstrated in this paper, but if I remember correctly, essentially the theory with the scalar field and without the scalar field have the same physical outcomes. So essentially the calculation of the entropy done referring to the modes of the black holes is not affected by this interpretation of the Barbary Emergency parameter.
So I'm just wondering about the value. I mean, do we have a unique value for whichever state I compute the expectation value, or like a different value for different states? So that's my question.
Okay. So here the state is supposed to be really referring to the state of the beta field. So the idea is that there might be some potential or something. The ground state is not beta equal to zero, but ground state is some some value. For example, one often does this in string theory, in the ADS-CFT correspondence, where again there are some scalar fields, and the idea is that scalar fields have some non-trivial values at infinity. And so here the idea would be that there are these non-trivial boundary values because in order to have finite total energy, the scalar field has to go to this particular value because the potential of the scalar field has a minimum at this beta naught. So I think when Simone is talking about expectation value, he's talking about the expectation value of the scalar field and not of the rest of the thing. And so it is true that we should redo the calculation of at least the conceptual part more carefully and see in the definition of isolation horizon. There was a scalar field previously. It was not related to the Barbary Emergency parameter. And so its value is not matter. Whereas now, your boundary conditions should incorporate this minimum value, that this potential, the minimum value beta naught on the isolated horizon. So yes, some more slight careful thinking is needed, but the general framework should really not be changed too much. This is the general expectation. Is this answered, Gulam?
Yeah, thank you.
Okay. Gianluca has some comment or question.
Yeah, I have a comment. Actually, what is not clear to me is the fact that for doing the quantum theory, we needed to define our set of canonical variables. And we've seen in one of the last slides that to do so, we already have to have the BI field sitting at the minimum of its effective potential. So in some sense, it's not clear how it seems as if the quantum theory is defined during the process of going to the vacuum of the theory. I mean, it's not like in QCD where we have some we can talk about quantization and I mean, we can describe the Pesci-Quinn mechanism while quantization is under control. Here, quantization is under control, in a sense, after the BI field has achieved its that.
No.
So I think, I mean, the analogy with the QCD may be valid, but up to some point. There are some differences with respect to the gravitational theory.
No, I want to clarify a point. I'm not assuming that the pseudo-scalar field is already in its minimum when I define the Ashtegard-Barbero variables with the beta naught. I'm only saying that, okay, I can define these new variables with this value, which I called beta naught in the definition, but then that value, I assume that value is is related to the minimum of the potential to which can be associated to the field beta. I'm not assuming before that the theory is in its minimum. I'm studying the dynamics, assuming that the constant I put in the definition of the Ashtegard-Barbero variables is related to the minimum of the field beta. But I'm not saying that it is the theory is already in its minimum. Otherwise, there should be no reason to put the dynamics of the scalar field in the constraints, because the scalar field is already in its minimum and is sitting there for all the evolution. I'm studying the evolution of the beta field, associating the value of the Barbero-Mizzi parameter with the expectation value of the beta field. But the beta field is a completely dynamical field. It's not sitting in the minimum of the potential.
That's perfectly fine, but then one may ask why you define your canonical variables with a beta naught. I mean, I believe there may be some physical picture about doing this, but if you take it as just a working hypothesis, that's perfectly fine for me.
No, because essentially the reason is that I want to... The main idea is that I want to determine the value of the Barbero-Mizzi parameter through a dynamical mechanism. And this is, I think, a very old idea. And so one possibility is this one. This is probably not the only possibility. I just try to give you a very general description of one of the 1,000 possibilities we have to fix the Barbero-Mizzi parameter in a dynamical way. But I think that here we can have some physical insight, because this mechanism is well known from QCD. So we are not doing something completely new. We don't know the physics behind this this model. The physics is well known, and we can try to apply this well-known model, the Pecci-Quinn mechanism, to this particular situation in gravity, where the Mizzi parameter is can be determined by using this mechanism. So,
okay. Other questions, comments?
This is Farhan. I have a question. So last year there was a paper by Kanchan Dase, Ramesh Kaur, and I think they had some similar work. So can you please comment on and compare with what was done there and what was different in your work?
No, I think that the work by you cited this, I remember it, and probably it's completely classical and not mentioned to the Pecci-Quinn mechanism was done. So the starting action is the same, but essentially the action with the Nie-Yan term in my model comes from the non-minimal action with fermions. So it's motivated by a previous work which was written in 2006, in which already the Nie-Yan, the role of the Nie-Yan term in gravity was pointed out. And in fact, in the work by the work you cited, I don't remember the names of the authors, they cite my work. They cite my work saying, okay, in this work, the role of the Nyeyang density in gravity was pointed out, and we argue that this can be a possible action for the gravitational system. So probably they knew my work when they wrote theirs. So I think here the new thing is the mechanism to determine the Barberi-Mirzi Paravidera with a dynamical mechanism, by using a dynamical mechanism. So the really new idea is the idea to promote the Barberi-Mirzi parameter to be a field, and I gave you a motivation from particle physics to do that.
Thank you.
Okay.
Any other questions or comments? Okay. If not, let us thank Simone again. Okay. Ore, any comments?